very much, Chris. And just thanks very much to everyone. Thank you for making me a part of this event. And since I am the last speaker of this week, we should maybe have a round of thanks to the organizers and the PI staff. It's been wonderful to see many of you again, and to be here together, also connecting with the online audience. So I want to talk about some ideas that came up in some recent and ongoing work of mine. I won't talk about this work directly until the very end. There's some relation between small quantum groups at Roots of Unity and non-semi-simple generalizations of Chern-Simons that Thomas Kreutzig, Nick Garner, and Nathan Geer and I wrote about, where we had to sort of understand a bit better some of the things I'll discuss in this talk. Part of my goal in the talk is to advertise aspects of topological twists of gauge theories that are sort of parallel to many of the things that are being discussed or have been discussed at this conference and the Simons collaboration. So the emphasis that I've seen so far in the collaboration has been on symmetries of physical systems, where there's a small subset of defects that behave topologically that sort of act on the rest of the theory. And in contrast, the things I've been looking at are topological twists of physical theories where everything is topological, but more interesting in other ways. So I'm hoping that this will connect to many of the new ideas being discussed here, and maybe also connect to other bits of maths and mathematical physics. And I can't believe I just put an S at the end of that word. Part of the advertising and perspective, I want to point out that despite topological twists of gauge theories having been studied for maybe three decades now since Witten introduced them, there's some big things that are still not quite known. If one takes a topological twist of a supersymmetric theory, one might optimistically expect a fully extended d-dimensional TQFT. And this fully extended thing has not been constructed in almost any examples. One sort of exception is a model of the three-dimensional B-twist of sigma models to cotangent bundles that Kapustin-Rosansky and Salina constructed in 2008. Despite that, many pieces at various categorical levels have been constructed and have played a huge role in connecting quantum field theory and various concepts in geometry and topology, including the original twist of Donaldson theory. There are many efforts nowadays to sort of fill in the missing levels in these in these twisted TQFTs and actually sort of put them all together. So in this talk, I will focus on the thing I've been studying the last few years, twists of 3D n equals 4 theories. So even here, the thing that's not known, there's some proposals now. The thing that's not known is the two category of boundary conditions and how to connect that up to categories of line operators and algebras of local operators and state spaces and so on. And like ideally what one would want is a two category that then induces by cobordism hypothesis the rest of the TQFT. So that's sort of work in progress. Most of what I'll discuss are state spaces and line operators. Just for orientation, the data that labels a 3D n equals 4 gauge theory is a gauge group and a symplectic representation. My examples in this talk are going to be fairly simple. I'll take the rep to be T star V, where or T star of some complex representation, where that complex representation in all my examples is just going to be C. Sometimes one can add Chern-Simons levels, and Gaiotto and Witten described when that can happen. That's fairly exceptional, though, with this amount of supersymmetry. N equals 4 is the smallest amount of supersymmetry in three dimensions that generically admits topological twists. And there are two twists, just like in two-dimensional 2,2 theories, that I like to call A and B. The A twist, it can be obtained as a reduction of Witten's Donaldson twist of 4D n equals 2. Alternatively, it's sort of an oxidation of the two-dimensional A model twist. The B twist first appears in three dimensions as opposed to higher. It's related to a B-type Langlands twist in 4D, and is also was the thing studied by Rozanski and Witten, discussed by Blount-Thompson, and is an oxidation of the two-dimensional B-twist. My plan is, since this is a really broad audience, also maybe an audience used to unitary and semi-simple theories, to discuss some features of these topological twists that don't appear when considering symmetry categories of unitary theories. And then to explain one of the richest features of these TQFTs, namely the structures induced from having continuous global symmetry around. And then at the end, I'll say a bit about why we might care about these theories, other than they're there, we should understand them. I'll discuss, or maybe just mention briefly, an application to these non-semi-simple quantum groups, or sketch how that works. So the things that are new in topological twists of supersymmetric theories, as opposed to unitary semi-simple topological theories, that everything in sight comes about as cohomology of some bigger object. The mathematical way to say that is that these are DG TQFTs or TQFTs enhanced in, I want to say, DG vector spaces, and someone will tell me there's some better way to say that. They are almost never unitary or semi-simple, and they're often extremely infinite, not fully dualizable. Infinities show up frequently, need to be regularized somehow, and one way to tame them is to use a Z grading that comes physically from having R symmetry around, and mathematically there's a Z cohomological grading around. That's specifically a statement about twists of gauge theories. Other 3D n equals 4 theories might break that. So I want to just say what some objects these theories look like. So I said there were infinities around. One of the things that is almost always infinite dimensional is the state space associated to some surface. The basic example of that is the space of states associated to a two-sphere, which by state operator correspondence in a topological theory is the same as local operators. So in the A twist of one of these 3D theories, one ends up with functions on the Coulomb branch. And in the B twist, one ends up with functions on the Higgs branch. The Higgs and Coulomb branches of 3D n equals 4 theories are non-compact hyperkähler manifolds. If we're dealing with a CFT, they're hyperkähler cones. And they have infinite dimensional algebras of functions. In contrast to what you would want in a semi-simple theory, where the space of states associated to the two-sphere ought to be one-dimensional. I mentioned that Z grading helps. An example of how that happens it's especially nice in if the theory is actually a CFT. These state spaces that are highly infinite dimensional, and you might think you have no control over them, actually break apart into finite dimensional graded pieces of non-negative degree. That gives some control.
So the Z is just like a rep of U1.
I can hear you. I
repeat. Okay, this Z that you had in the slide before, no, the grading,
yes.
The Z grading. Is rep of U1?
It's a U1 symmetry.
Okay.
Yeah. Exactly. It's a U1 sitting inside some SU2R symmetry.
This is just the charges, no?
Exactly. Okay. The Z is the charge lattice.
Okay, thanks.
Yes. The thing that's special about it, as opposed to other symmetries, is that the differential being used also has degree one. That's why I'm calling it a cohomological grading. That's just what happens when this supercharge you're taking cohomology with respect to is degree one. So line operators form a DG category, which means morphism spaces of local operators at junctions of lines are DG vector spaces, and DG means differential graded, which means a vector space that has a Z grading from this U1 symmetry and a differential acting on it, the thing you twist with. In gauge theories, there are multiple geometric models for what the category of line operators should look like. They're not super nice. I've written some of them here, and I'll go through it. One thing that I'm claiming, for which the motivation comes really from boundary vertex algebras, is that this category of line operators can always be written as the derived category of something abelian non-semi-simple, and so there's if hopefully I don't know if hopefully those words mean something. If not, let me know or chat with me afterwards. This is sort of as close as one can get to the sorts of categories that have appeared earlier this week. And then the operation one does to obtain the full thing is just to take a derived category. Example, I will just throw some things out there that maybe different people will connect with. In a free hypermultiplet, in the B twist, so this is pure matter. It looks like it should be a really stupid theory. It in fact has really interesting categories of line operators in both the A and the B twist. And so in the B twist, one gets coherent sheaves on T star C, where T star C is the Higgs branch or the moduli space of the theory. Standard things to say that I think I first learned from Davide. Your first guess for what line operators in a sigma model should look like, here a sigma model with target T star C, is sheaves on the target or some sort of bundles with connection on the target. The reason those label line operators is because one can pull back a connection from the target to spacetime and then take the holonomy of that connection and integrate it just like you would in defining a Wilson line. So this is sort of a sensible guess. The objects here are sheaves with holomorphic connections on the target that can be pulled back and you can define line operators that way. And some algebraic geometry says this is a sensible guess if we compute endomorphisms of the tensor unit, which is the structure sheaf, then we get holomorphic functions on T star C, which is the Higgs branch, which is the right thing. In the A twist of pure matter, what one ends up with are vortex lines. So in the A twist, fields localize to holomorphic configurations. In the B twist, everything localizes to constant or locally constant configurations. In the A twist, one gets holomorphic things, just like in two dimensions. at least holomorphic transverse to a line operator. And so what can happen is that the hypermultiplets develop a mirror morphic singularity at a line. And so this, what looks like a stupid free theory, ends up having vortices, infinitely massive vortex lines that are the basic objects that the category of line operators is built out of. And I've written fancier things on this slide, but I think I'll just leave them as text.
Should I think about the T star C with its with the symplectic structure, or?
Yeah, you should. So the symplectic structure is important in defining a braided tensor structure on, sure, on this category.
So is this basically a Rozansky-Witten?
It is exactly Rozansky-Witten, where the target is T star C. Yes. That's sort of, this is an example that sits at the intersection of these gauge theories and sigma models. As soon as there is gauge symmetry, the category gets much more complicated, and it involves loop spaces. And I intentionally have not given any examples quite like that here. On the A side, loop spaces are unavoidable, and so I had to write them down, but I'm not going to talk about them. I'll say physics things-ish. So there are flavor vortex lines in the A twist. I call them flavor vortices, but they're vortices where the hypermultiplet has some sort of singularity. Half of it has a pole, and half of it has a zero of some order at the line. The thing that one can compute is that there are non-trivial bound states of these vortex lines, and that's really what makes this non-semi-simple. Think there are many ways to think about that, and again, this is sort of ask me questions if you want to know more. The basic computation is looking at local operators in homological degree one at a junction of two vortex lines. One can find them. There's some sort of generalized monopole-like operators exist even in a free theory. If they're in homological degree one, which means they just have to have the right R symmetry, they can be used to bind together these two lines mathematically in a cone construction. Just to give some dual examples, so 3D mirror symmetry swaps A and B twists. 3D mirror symmetries also swaps a free hypermultiplet with SQED, U1 gauge theory with a hyper. Dually, the B twist of SQED has a bunch of Wilson lines labeled by the integers. And the Wilson lines have non-trivial bound states, just like vortex lines did for free hyper. In the A-twist, when A-twist of SQED, one gets something that's a little hard and annoying to describe. Not necessarily annoying. It's beautiful if you're happy with D modules on a loop stack. But maybe one thing I should say here to connect is that the Braverman-Finkelberg-Nakajima construction of local operators on the Coulomb branch can be recast as a computation of endomorphisms of the tensor unit, or the tensor identity, in this sort of thing that I wrote down that I hesitate to even talk about, D modules on the loop space of a certain derived stack. That plugging through suitable mathematics when it ends up on the nose with the Braverman-Finkelberg-Nakajima construction. So just in summary, in a theory with matter, just focusing on the hypermultiplets, in a B-type twist, one finds sort of sheaves on the hypermultiplets or sheaves on the target. In an A-type twist, one finds vortex lines labeled by singularities in the matter. In a gauge theory in the B-twist, one finds Wilson lines. In a gauge theory in the A-twist, one finds something related to the BFN construction, just calling dual sheaves. And mirror symmetry swaps everything around. A final piece of structure that's really beautiful is that there these 3D topological theories admit holomorphic boundary conditions that I think were first discussed by Davide and then constructed more generally in a paper by Costello and Gaiotto a few years ago. One hears that boundary conditions are objects of the category of boundary conditions this category of boundary conditions is what the TQFT assigns to a point. We've heard other talks this week where we associated points and boundary conditions. That's not what's happening here. Topological boundary conditions are objects of some two category. that is complicated and that I'm not discussing. In addition to topological boundary conditions that are sort of part of the TQFT, there are these other holomorphic boundary conditions that are not topological. They depend on a choice of complex structure. They're directly analogous, or they're really generalizations of WZW boundary conditions in Trin-Simons theory. In Trin-Simons, one learns that one can reconstruct many levels of that TQFT by just knowing the WZW model, using conformal blocks to get state spaces, taking modules for WZW to get the category of line operators. And one expects the same thing here. So these holomorphic boundary conditions support some vertex algebras. Unlike WZW, they are not rational. To get state spaces, one, in principle, should take something called derived conformal blocks or chiral homology of the VOA, where in homological degree zero or R-chart zero, that's just ordinary conformal blocks, but has infinite other stuff on top. And the category of lines should be the derived category of VOA modules. And this is really the reason I believe that these categories are always the derived category of something, because miraculously these boundary VOAs exist that are just ordinary VOAs. They're not rational, but otherwise. So in the really simple examples of this talk, for a free hypermultiplet in the B-twist, there's a boundary condition that supports the symplectic fermion VOA, and free matter in the A-twist, there's a boundary condition that supports the symplectic boson VOA. And if we go to gauge theories, the nice one to talk about is the B-twist of a gauge theory, where the VOA is, well, starts out as perturbatively is Katz-Moody for GL11. That's still not fully precise. One needs to say something about Casimirs, but it's some form of Katz-Moody for GL11, and then one has to extend in a WZW sort of way. Anyway, these exist, and they're extremely powerful. And in fact, boundary VOAs are the only way I know to actually concretely compute fusion products and braidings in these categories of bulk lines, sort of the same way that that Witten did many years ago for Trin-Simons. Using more Seiberg technology. I think that's all I wanted to say about the general features of these 3D twisted theories. They're sort of like infinite derived versions or analogs of Trin-Simons. Let me now go to the second thing I wanted to talk about, which is the role of global symmetry, and maybe ask before that if there are any questions or objections. Great. 3D n equals 4 gauge theories tend to have large continuous global symmetry groups. The simplest ones are symmetries that act on the matter, sort of modulo the action of the gauge group. When you have lots of flavors, there's some big symmetry. The symmetries I'm considering here are closely related to again, to things that have appeared in this conference, and in particular to things that Lakshya Bhardwaj, Matt Bullimore, Andrea Ferrari, and Sakura talked about in a recent paper, and that they've been working on. So they're working and not on topological twists of these theories, but trying to describe higher group symmetries that act on the full physical theory. The perspective I want to take here is that when you're dealing with a topological twist, yes, you get some giant category, well, everything's topological. You get some giant category of line operators and interfaces and whatnot. But sitting within there is some beautiful, simpler structure that's induced from having global symmetries around. What I'll say here is really part of the story, and it should interface really nicely with the higher groups and the various discrete symmetries that have been studied in the literature. Also, much of what I'm saying here is an extension of things that Davide discussed in a paper a few years ago, where he was trying to understand geometric Langlands from the perspective of Hilbert spaces of 3D n equals 4 theories. Okay, sorry, that's enough talk. So, setup. 3D n equals 4 theory with a continuous zero-form global symmetry gamma. And I've done something that might be physically obnoxious. So I've used gamma little c to denote like the actual physical compact symmetry group. But the thing that's actually relevant for most of the algebraic constructions is its complexification. That's what I'll call big gamma. So what happens when we have such a symmetry and take a topological twist? The slogan in the B twist is that the TQFT gets enhanced by flat gamma connections, and that gamma acts general non-trivially on everything. This enhancement by flat connections is related to the fact that if we had a gauge theory, the equations of motion in the B twist, or just equations for Q to act trivially on field configurations, those equations would tell you that the gauge connection, suitably complexified by some auxiliary scalars, that gauge connection has to be flat. And if instead of a gauge theory, we have a theory with flavor symmetry, it is consistent to take the B twist of a theory in the background of a flat flavor connection. That leads to structure that is extremely similar to what you would have in an ordinary QFT with a discrete symmetry. There, one can use a background for this discrete symmetry or a background of defects to construct flat connections. And here the flatness comes about for other reasons, and the symmetry is continuous, but much of the structure ends up looking exactly the same. And so, upshot, in defining a state space on some surface sigma, we can make a choice of flat gamma connection on that surface, and it's a complexified connection that ends up being relevant again. And so we don't just have a single state space, but a whole bundle of state spaces as we vary the connection, and they fit into a sort of sheaf over the space of flat connections on the surface. And the sheaf is equivariant for gauge transformations. In other words, gauge transformations induce an isomorphism on state spaces. Flavor gauge transformations induce an isomorphism on state spaces. Moreover, there's still an action of the global symmetry group. Literally, if we turn a connection on a surface and ask what part of the group still acts, what part of the group is this a representation for? Well, it's the part of the group that commutes with the connection. So global transformations that leave the connection on the surface unchanged. If the connection is trivial, if A is zero, this is the entire group gamma, but it might be smaller. And the reason that's what still acts is something I tried to explain in a picture. This schematic. So suppose we have a surface and we introduce a bunch of gamma defects to turn on a non-trivial flat connection. We've discretized it. So there are defects at some fixed points here. I've just run one of them. And we ask how can we consistently then act with other codimension one defects to get an action on this state space. Well, that's consistent if we take an element that commutes, an element G prime that commutes with the network of defects that we put on the surface to begin with. And if those commute, we get an action. Okay. Structure of state spaces. And then one can say something very analogous about line operators. So when we have a global symmetry around, we can, in a discretized setting, we can consider line operators with a gamma defect extending from them, is I think something that's very familiar here. In a more continuous setting, I would say, in the B-twist, we can consider a flat connection, a flat flavor connection, or flat flavor background that has monodromy at a line. And ask not for lines in empty space, but for lines sort of on top of this flavor monodromy defect. So for each choice of flat connection in the neighborhood of a line, for each monodromy or for each way of connecting a gamma surface to the line, we get a different category of line operators. All of these categories that I'm calling Z of S1 labeled by a connection, all these categories fit together into, again, a sort of sheaf over the space of connections on a circle, on the link of a line, which really only depends on that connection modulo gauge transformations, and so we get a sheaf over the group over the group manifold, and then the zero form defects also act on the lines, again, in a way that's probably familiar. So if you have an element G prime that commutes with your monodromy defect surface G, then you get an action. Because when connections are flat, monodromy around the line has to be preserved up to conjugation. Morphisms in this category between line operators labeled by different monodromies are always zero. There are no HOMs, unless the monodromy is conjugate. That leads to selection rules on computing HOMs and suggests that there's a one-form symmetry around controlling that, or a one-form symmetry that would measure the monodromy, and if you want to measure monodromy, you consider a Wilson line. And so one can put those in by hand. I think in the most natural way one would define this category, the flavor Wilson lines are not actually objects to begin with, but they can be added. And then one could talk about an emergent one-form symmetry that controls this controls this vibration over the group. So just to be a little more concrete, this sort of setup arises already in the B-twist of free matter. A free hypermultiplet has an SP1 flavor symmetry, complexified, that gives us an SL2C symmetry gamma that will act on everything in sight. Moreover, we expect state spaces and the category of lines to be deformed by SL2C flat connections. I'm not computing anything here. I will give you some examples of what actually happens. So the state space on a surface of genus G for free matter, this is something Rozansky and Witten computed. It is infinite dimensional. It's the underlying vector space of an algebra with 2G fermions. That's just quantization of the zero modes of fermions in the hyper on a surface of genus G, and two bosons, and those are the bosons in the hyper. They act on this state space of any surface and generate new states. These are just that comes from local operators acting. So that's when the connection is zero, and as soon as you turn on a connection, the infinite dimensional bit coming from local operators collapses, and for a generic connection, this infinite dimensional space suddenly becomes something small and finite. And so one way to control infinite dimensionality is to use the homological grating or the R symmetry. Another way to do it is to deform by flat connections. That makes the infinite dimensional space finite. It kills the bosons and it just leaves a bunch of fermions, and we know that the Fock space of fermions is finite dimensional. In categorical terms, something similar happens. Turning on connections kills non-semi-simplicity and derived structure. So in this free hypermultiplet example, one starts out with coherent sheaves on the Higgs branch. And turning on a generic connection reduces that to coherent sheaves on a point, which is just vector spaces. And that becomes simple. And so the picture that I've had in my head since thinking about this is that, again, we have these sheaves of state spaces, we have these sheaves of categories, and at some very special points, some complex codimension, at least one loci, at some very special points, the category is not semi-simple, it has huge interesting derived structure, and at generic points, it becomes very small and semi-simple. These deformations can also be understood in terms of vertex algebras. The flavor symmetry in the B-twist manifests as a global symmetry of a VOA, and what I really mean there is constant symmetry. So in the case of the B-twist of a hyper, we're dealing with symplectic fermions. That VOA has a symmetry that's just constant SL2C transformations. Promoting that to holomorphic space-dependent transformations, one doesn't get the same VOA back, but gets a VOA whose OPE has been deformed. And turning that around on its head a little bit, one can figure out how to couple a VOA that's only invariant under constant gauge transformations to a flat connection by just promoting the constant gauge transformation to a space-dependent one and figuring out where the connection appears. This is also something one does in kindergarten when learning how to gauge theories, gauge Lagrangians. Anyway, same thing works in VOAs. If we play this game, we end up with a deformed version of symplectic fermions that now depends on a connection, on a holomorphic connection, or mirror-morphic on a surface. And if this connection is generic, this VOA is actually isomorphic to free fermions, which is rational, and has a semi-simple representation category. I should hurry up. So that was the B-twist, which I already find extremely interesting and can obviously talk about for hours. Something even cooler happens in the A-twist. So if we have flavor symmetry in the A-twist, that leads to deformations in three dimensions by monopole configurations, but in two dimensions or lower, that's the same thing as holomorphic connections. So instead of flat, we get holomorphic, but also the codimension one defects that generate the zero-form symmetry become trivial in the A twist. Those defects themselves become Q-exact, and the upshot is that the infinitesimal action of gamma, or the action of the Lie algebra, becomes trivial in the A twist. That leaves room for higher actions. The very basic upshot is that the state spaces are representations of gamma, but they're trivial representations of gamma. globally, state spaces become a sheaf over what mathematicians call bungee of sigma, which means holomorphic bundles with holomorphic connections in analytic terms. And line operators also depend on a holomorphic connection in the complement of a line or on a punctured disk. They form a sheaf over again, it's the same thing as in the B-twist, just because flat connections and holomorphic connections on a punctured disk are essentially the same thing. The new thing that we get that is closely related to the Lie algebra action being trivial in the A-twist is an emergent internal one-form symmetry. And so the claim is that there's an infinite one-form symmetry whose generators are labeled by the co-character lattice of the symmetry group gamma. And to the extent it makes sense, its charges, well, most line operators are not eigenstates or eigen whatever is of the symmetry, but the ones that are, the symmetry measures where you sit on the space of connections on S1 that labels line operators. Since time is short, I think I'll say this in a few different ways, and give you some examples of this emergent one-form symmetry. The generators of the symmetry are the flavor vortex lines that I talked about before in a slightly different way. So for a free hypermultiplet in the A-twist, one has vortex lines where the matter acquires a singularity, and these turn out to have a very simple tensor algebra, and they braid trivially with each other. from a VOA perspective, in the B-twist, we had a constant symmetry, or finite dimensional symmetry that acted on the VOA. In the A-twist, what one ends up with is a VOA with an entire loop group action. And the one-form symmetry that I'm talking about can be understood as spectral flow for this loop group action on a VOA. And so in the case of a free hyper in the A-twist, from a VOA perspective, we're looking at modules for a beta-gamma system. beta-gamma has an SP1 Ketz-Moody action. A U1 part of that is the thing with current beta-gamma. And the vortex lines that I talked about earlier are spectral flows of the vacuum module for this U1 symmetry. One final way to view the structure is from a mirror dual perspective. So the theory that's mirrored to a hyper is SQED, in this example. And so if we take the B-twist of SQED, we should see similar structure, this emergent one-form symmetry. And we can find it. So in SQED, the global symmetry that's relevant is the topological U1. The generators of the one-form symmetry I mentioned in the topological twist are Wilson lines. And so just to contrast with the physical theory, the physical theory has Wilson lines. They are not topological. Depending on what the matter is in a gauge theory, there may or may not be some other one-form symmetry, some discrete one-form symmetry around for which the Wilson lines are charged objects. This has turned the whole thing on its head. in the topological twist, the Wilson lines are topological. And Wilson lines for abelian parts of the gauge group themselves are they're invertible objects in the category of lines. They have a very simple tensor algebra, and they themselves generate an infinite one-form symmetry. And here in this mirror dual perspective, I can also say explicitly what the charged objects are. If I ask for eigenobjects of, in this case, a Z one-form symmetry, the eigenobjects are monodromy defects for the gauge field, which are things that exist in the B-twist of SQED. So one can define a disorder operator by letting the gauge field have a certain monodromy defect, or forcing it to have a certain monodromy defect at a line. And if we encircle one of these monodromy defects with a Wilson line, we'll just get a multiplication by a phase, or by a complexified phase, which depends on which Wilson line and which monodromy we've chosen. Okay. That's the structure I wanted to present. So to summarize a little bit, there's maybe another thing I didn't. Well, there are different kinds of global symmetry. There are different kinds of flavor symmetry in 3D n equals 4 theories. They only matter insofar as, well, there are two different multiplets that their currents can lie in, and they behave differently with respect to the A and B twists. And I made some choice in this talk. And that is maybe already clear to experts and not relevant to non-experts. Anyway, so given a global symmetry of a certain kind, in the B-twist, one gets non-trivial actions of the zero-form symmetry on everything in sight. Moreover, everything gets enhanced or fibers over flat connections. In the A-twist, one gets trivial actions of the zero-forms of the infinitesimal zero-form symmetry. Everything, all the different objects in the TQFT are enhanced or fiber over holomorphic connections, monopoles, and there is an emergent internal one-form symmetry. The category of lines automatically has a bunch of invertible objects that generate this one form. Right, I'm just gonna finish up by maybe telling you why one might, well, another reason one might care about twists of 3D n equals 4 theories. I think I'll just leave it as a this is a thing that exists. So to connect with Chris's talk from a few days ago, he said some things about small quantum groups and big quantum groups and non-semi-simple representation categories. The thing I want to emphasize about that is that so one hears about quantum groups in the context of Chern-Simons, and Reshetykin and Turiyev famously used quantum groups at a root of unity to give an algebraic construction of Witten's TQFT. The category that Reshetykin and Turiyev used is a tiny, tiny part of the full representation category of a quantum group at a root of unity that behaves very nicely, and the full thing is much bigger in ways that are not going to be explained in the next 30 seconds. If one wants physically to produce a three-dimensional quantum field theory whose category of line operators has a chance to match the full representation category of a quantum group at a root of unity rather than the tiny Reshetykin-Turiyev thing, one has to go outside of the semi-simple world, and a natural guess is to look at twists of supersymmetric theories, and it turns out that works. A very short slogan for what the right non-semi-simple generalization of Chern-Simons is Chern-Simons with 3D n equals 4 twisted matter. So there's a, given any group G, there's a theory called, well, ADE type, there's a theory called T of G that Gaiota and Witten introduced as the S-duality wall in 4D Yang-Mills. One takes, very, very roughly, one takes the A-type twist of T of G, and couples it to Chern-Simons theory using a G symmetry. And so our claim is that the category of line operators in this thing ends up looking like the derived category of modules for the small quantum group at a root of unity. And there's some flavor symmetry left over, which connects to the flat connection part of my talk. There are flat connections around in representation theory of quantum groups at a root of unity. There are flat connections in this 3D theory, just because T of G happens to have G times G dual symmetry, and if you gauge G with a Chern-Simons level, you're left over with G-duals flavor symmetry that leads to flat connections. And those two instances of flat connections match up. I think that's all I want to say, and I'll end there. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Any questions?
Thanks for the nice talk, Tudor. I have a question, probably very naive from this perspective. But you mentioned that there is this this construction for which you have state spaces that are somewhat like bundles over a space of flat connections, or which are like the background fields. So one remark is it's nice to see that also in this more elevated context, like backgrounds resolve degeneracies. So that you start from something that is non semi-simple and complicated, you turn on backgrounds and you get to something finite dimensional, and which is very nice.
Yeah.
But the question was, do you have a notion of Berry connections for this structure? You have a Hilbert space, right?
Yeah.
And you fiber it over some sort of a moduli space of backgrounds.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is there any application of that, or it is interesting, or?
This is the structure that I learned about from one of Davide's papers some years ago. That gets you very close to geometric Langlands. these state spaces, they're not just arbitrary sheaves. They do have connections on them. And you get the connection physically by asking, like, what happens if I infinitesimally vary the parameter on the base? That's some coupling in the Lagrangian, and you can figure out what inserting a dual operator does, and it gives you in the B twist, it gives you locally a holomorphic connection, and in the A twist, it gives you a flat connection on these bundles of state spaces, in one case, the state space globally gives you a coherent sheaf over flat connections. In the other case, it gives you a D-module over bungee. These are objects in the Langlands categories. At least that's one thing you can do with them. You can do many others, but yeah. Is that okay?
So thank you for the nice talk, first of all. And I believe this is the last talk in the conference. So I have a question which I can address to all the speakers, but I would like to hear what you think about that. So specifically for your talk, you showed, if I understand correctly, interesting connections between the physical theory and some mathematics. And I'm questioning in which direction does it go, or does it go both ways? So if I understand you correctly, you use the physical picture to learn something about math. Can you use it the other way around and say something non-trivial about 3D n equals 4 theories?
So the zeroth order answer to that for me is that one suddenly has access to powerful computational techniques involving algebraic geometry in particular. So once you translate, it gives you ways to compute things that are extremely difficult to access physically. I guess an example of that is like the construction of the Coulomb-Branch chiral ring that I and others worked on from a physical perspective, and you can with effort say quite a lot. And then Braverman, Finkelberg, and Nakajima came and said, look, like there's actually this definition that works very generally, and gave an algebraic geometry approach to doing that. So one, computational things. You start to learn how to organize structure and what to look for. And of course, you probably know that already. Um, you, you, you learn that symmetries and higher symmetries and these categories have to fit together in a very specific way. And then if you know a few of the bits or of the ingredients, then you can sort of infer how the rest must fit.
The question. Should I think of this as a theory with a vacuum moduli space and some finite dimensional TQFTs in each vacuum? This is a question by Ryan Thorngren.
Can you just say that again?
Should I think of this as a theory with a vacuum moduli space and some finite dimensional TQFTs in each vacuum?
Yes. I think I think that's a promising way to go about it. The infinite dimensionality in state spaces is certainly coming from having a non-compact space of vacua. And so if you sort of instead of working over all vacua at once, if you specialize and work over that, then yes, I think that's a very useful way to try to make this finite dimensional. And something that needs to actually be implemented concretely. Yeah.
All right. Any additional questions? Going once, going twice. Okay, so let's have the speaker again. Maybe we can also thank the organizers one more time.